In today's program, we interview Julie Urlob. She's the author of the Business Sustainability Handbook, founder and managing partner of Tiger Company, and is recognized as one of the top thought leaders in social media for sustainability. Now, when she's not helping companies sort out their sustainability policies, you can find her on the back of a mountain bike, as she is an avid endurance mountain bike racer and has competed in the National Ultra Endurance Series, 24-hour mountain bike national championships, and more. So with all that exciting stuff, let's go and join Alan and Julie in the studio now and find out how paleo is so central to a lot of what Julie does.
Good morning, Julie, and welcome to the Low Carb Paleo Show. I understand you're a specialist in sustainability and a paleo practitioner. Can you tell us about your background?
Yes. Well, first, Alan, thank you so much for having me here today. I'm thrilled to be a part of this conversation because I think it's unique and offers great value. So a little about me. As you mentioned, I have a background in sustainability and social media. So I help green and sustainable businesses tell their story on social media. But more interesting to that equation is that I'm an endurance mountain bike racer. And that is what really, combined with sustainability, targeted my focus around a paleo diet or somewhat of a variance of a paleo diet. So currently, I would say that I am a modified paleo diet practitioner with somewhat of a vegetarian twist as of the last 2 months. So if you had to summarize it, I'd say that it's an interesting approach because I have an open mind to nutrition as to health and wellness, as well as its combination in sports performance.
How do you manage to combine a vegetarian and a paleo diet? Because typically a paleo diet is focused on animal protein.
Absolutely. In fact, it's only been within the last couple of months that I have shifted to the vegetarian diet. And I did it as an experiment to see what the difference is, because previously I, as an endurance mountain bike racer, I felt compelled to consume a great deal of meat, lean protein, according to paleo. And as you know, the enzymes and so forth help with muscle and endurance, repair, and so forth. This season, I am not racing, so my requirements, my nutritional requirements are a little bit different than what they would have been in the past. So I thought, okay, this is a perfect time to kind of compare the contrast between the nutritional requirements of racing versus the nutritional requirements of training. Because I'm still training, like 10 to 12 hours a week, but I'm not racing at the intensity. So it's distinct and different. And like I said, it is an experiment. And also it's an experiment from a sustainability perspective, because there are those in the sustainability space that advocate against a meat, you know, they go vegan or vegetarian. So again, it's reflecting the open-mindedness of it all, but it boils back down to that basic essence of following your own instincts for your own body, right? As opposed to paying attention to all the information that's out there in the world and really touching base with what are your requirements at this time, because it's a dynamic process. It's not static.
Can you tell us what your current diet would be?
Yes. Well, currently, because of the vegetarian focus, it's opened my eyes to different sources of protein. However, it was the paleo diet that really got me to make the choice around the vegetarian, in the sense that, like, currently I eat a lot of fruits, a lot of vegetables, nuts. And although vegetarians, I think, eat more grains, the paleo diet is really advocates against that. And that was something that I really took from paleo that I've still maintained, as well as I don't eat a lot of dairy. And about 2 years ago, it was really when I made this shift, because I was looking at some of the different cookbooks. And unfortunately, I didn't have your cookbook available, but there's one. It wasn't so much a cookbook. It was the Fat Chance book by Dr. Lutnig, I think, Lustig, I forget his name, but it was around sugar. And right. That's what led me to the paleo, which led me to the vegetarian, which is where I am now. So the trick, though, is getting quality protein and enough protein with vegetarian, right, in relation to sports performance. And I think that at the end of July is when I'm going to reevaluate that choice and see how that's working. It's been an interesting approach.
So for vegetarian friends out there, can you spell it out, for example? Because if you're not eating grains and pulses, then how do you get your complete proteins?
Well, I've kind of supplemented with some hemp protein powder. I've used a lot of that. I've started paying more attention to the protein content in the vegetables and how to combine them. A lot of advocates are around like rice and quinoa. Like I said, the paleo thing with the rice, I'm not so fond of. I have introduced in moderate amounts some quinoa. And then I've explored some new supplements for micronutrients. They're not so much around the protein, but it's a mulberry, white mulberries. They're not so high in the protein, but they're really high in micronutrients. So like I said, I'm still in this exploratory phase. And that's, I think, the complication, right? That's the advantage of following the paleo diet versus, say, a vegetarian diet. When you talk about paleo, it gives you, a clearer roadmap if you are embarking on that path. Whereas for me, even though I feel like I have some sound nutrition and a background around it, that going vegetarian has been a little bit more challenging in terms of where do I find those complete proteins that meet my requirements of, say, not having dairy. I'm not eating eggs at the moment and I'm not having meat. So how do I do that and not have so many grains and mixing with beans because I'm not doing the bean thing? So you see what I'm saying? It's not as clear of a roadmap as, say, a paleo diet would be.
I have a very good source of sea vegetable protein, which is blue green algae. Yes. Have you tried that?
I have. Well, you can get powders like at Whole Foods. I've experimented with different powders, and that's helpful. But the trick is finding it to be tasteful and something that you yearn and look forward to having, as opposed to just eating to live. Right? I mean, part of the beauty of food is that culture and sharing with others and having it be something that, you know, when you go out with friends, I mean, you're not like, oh, can't have that. Oh, not that either. And you're like, I invite you to go to dinner. So, you know, it has to be a lifestyle that works. And that is, you know, I can take when I speak at different events and conferences and, you know, and it also has to be one that resonates with me. Like, my body has changed. I'm 47 now. So my body has changed in its nutritional needs and what it prefers. And when I was younger, and I think all of those factors play into it, into the decision making and making it an enjoyable experience rather than just something to, otherwise, I mean, why even eat then? Just have some lab product, right?
Right. Yeah. So it sounds to me like if you're not eating dairy, no eggs, then you're vegan, really.
Sort of, I guess so. I hate to put a label on it because I use the paleo as my guidepost, right? But when I started saying total vegetarian or vegan and so forth, then for me, what comes up are the rules. Supposedly, you can have this or you can't have that. And from my mindset, having can and can't triggers things within me that create resistance or lack or just emotional things that then trigger different types of eating for me. So I've noticed with myself, if I just stay away from the stereotypes and the trigger words and pay more attention to what is it that I want to eat? What is it that my body is telling me it desires? What's of interest and curiosity to me around food? Then I find it naturally flowing in a direction that works. And that's since the paleo aspect and then the vegetarian and so forth. Whereas if I get stuck in, oh, I can only have this or I can't have that, then I get into a logical discussion and then it becomes a power struggle within myself and I'm not eating based on what my body wants. I'm following some rule that I read in Cosmopolitan magazine or something. It takes me outside of myself.
Yeah, well, there are plenty of people who do follow Cosmopolitan for their dietary choices.
It's wonderful, and maybe it is really good advice to where they are in their path, but for me, I just really discovered, initially, it was getting, you know, really eliminating sugar in my diet. And as an endurance athlete, you know, there's a lot of marketing and advertising around nutritional products when you're on the bike. So if you're on the bike for 12 and 14 hours, you know, there are requirements that say, oh, you should have this much grams of sugar and this many grams of protein per hour and fluids in order to sustain this. And for a long time, I subscribed to that belief system. But what then I realized was, well, what if I do back off on the sugar, not just on the bike, but off the bike as well? How does that affect my body? And then how does that affect my performance? And how does that affect my brain chemistry, so to speak, when I'm at work, right? In terms of clarity and mental focus and productivity. And then that, of course, led to the paleo, right? Yeah. Because at first, getting rid of sugar was like, oh my God, no, I can't do that, right? And this big uproar, you know, I mean, I took it out of my coffee, I took it out of everything. And so then, you know, then it was paleo, right? Which led me to eating more and more vegetables. Before, I didn't eat nearly as many vegetables. And, you know, now, I mean, just steamed broccoli is like heaven. I mean, I could just gobble that up. I mean, just boring steamed broccoli, because I'm like Alan here. I mean, I'm lucky to boil water. So, you know, and then, of course, then that led to the next, you know, expression of, okay, so what else can I do? And how does that feel for me? It's been a wonderful journey. I'm really enjoying it. It awakened my curiosity around food.
Excellent. Have you noticed an increase in your intake in fat?
I have, somewhat. And I don't recall if avocados, because I'm not really sure if they're paleo okay, but
yes, they are.
Yes, I enjoy avocados tremendously. And when I was eating meat, I was eating the fat on the meat. And I found that to be really helpful. In fact, my coach had mentioned that many of his athletes, when they had made the transition as well to eating paleo and eating the fats on the meats and not cutting it off and having to be so lean, were feeling good on the bike post and post-race and during training as well.
You mentioned some of your friends considering eating animal-based protein not being sustainable, yet we've had some very interesting discussion with farmers, new farmers, that are actually creating whole aspect of raising the animals in a sustainable way. So I'm hearing some contradiction from both sides.
Yes, and I can see why, because being in this space, I see the same type of contradiction, and I think that that's not unlike everything else that we see in the sustainability space, meaning it's still evolving. Sustainability as a whole is evolving. What it means to be sustainable is evolving from a corporation standpoint, from a personal standpoint. So what I like to do is point back to the individual and say, what is your definition of sustainability and how does that resonate with you in terms of your values? And then how is that expressed? So for me, for instance, when I was eating meat, which has been my whole entire life except for these last 2 months, you know, the idea around it was sourcing it locally. Grass-fed meat is more sustainable to me than the corn, in the sense when they're fed corn, because corn is like monocropping and so forth. Non-GMO, right, because I'm opposed to that. And while I'm not a specialist in those two specific fields in terms of agriculture and GMO and so forth, it's a big movement, and local sourcing can provide many benefits, much like what I think like bees, you know, with the honey to local bees in terms of the nutrients that are local to that area actually help the people that live in that space, right? So it helps the economy and other factors in terms of sourcing locally. So, I mean, when you look at the bigger picture of the sustainability, it's not so much just, is it the meat, right? Or is it the ecosystem that the farmer creates, but it's the economic perspective, right? Sustainability from an economic wholesome space.
Right.
And how it impacts people. So it can, like I said, it varies in terms of how you define sustainability and those values and how it resonates with you.
For the farmers, there's a more sustainable way for them to allow the animals to grow and grass feed during a rotation program that doesn't affect the environment as much as the traditional or the more intense way of raising cattle. So we talked a couple of weeks ago to the Savory Foundation, and they are advocate And they're teaching all over the world farmers' methods on how to rotate their crops and allow the animals to move around and basically create the cycle of life that keeps on repeating itself, and it's not affecting the environment at all. And I found that very interesting.
Mm. Absolutely. It is a complement to the land in terms of the land, the soil, water retention in the soil from runoff, opportunities to heal the land in a sense, right? And not have to use pesticides and so forth. So like it goes back to what we were just talking about in terms of that big picture, wholesome life cycle analysis of the whole process, as opposed to micromanaging, is meat sustainable or does meat, eating meat, you know, contribute to climate change? It's, you know, you can take it, that conversation, from so many different angles and have very valid conversations and great insights. But I think in order to really have the truest value, it needs to be taken at the highest level possible and then break it down into segments. Hmm. Look at it from that perspective.
Going back a little bit to your paleo journey, how long have you been eating paleo?
A couple of years about, and it's, like I said, I'm a modified because there are certain restrictions, right? There are certain nuts that you're not supposed to eat and certain fruits, right? I think like bananas, you know, and sometimes during races I eat bananas. So I'm not super strict, but I've used it as a guideline.
Yeah, so you got it to a point where it was working for you, basically.
Absolutely.
So what were the biggest changes that you noticed in you physically from eating as you used to eat to eating paleo?
Two words, mental clarity. Hmm. It's mental clarity. And when I made the shift, part of it was really looking at sugar in the diet and making sure that I was eating the vegetables and the protein, right? And that was a dramatic increase in terms of mental clarity, productivity, focus, and I guess you could say energy along with that, but I was able to sustain mental clarity for a much longer period of time. When I talk about mental clarity, I'm talking about not having cloudy, fuzzy thoughts, you know, not feeling that tired, draining feeling, not having, you know, multiple kind of random thoughts in my head. Like it was a real clear distinction that I noticed.
Excellent. And that's, I mean, that was on sort of the mental side. What about the physical side?
Well, the physical side, I just felt better. I think I recovered faster on the bike. I felt like I had sharper energy. So for instance, like, you know, when you're riding long periods of times and you're going up a hill, you kind of stand up and you pump, you know, your bike hard and fast. And it was in those moments that I felt that those short bursts were longer, sustained, and I could recover faster from them. And again, I mentioned that because I'm older, right? I'm not like a 30-year-old training for these races. I'm 47 and I'm at altitude, so, you know, like 6,200 feet or so. And so that matters in terms of recovery, energy, and the ability to get out there and do another hard workout day after day. Mm. And so that's what I really noticed, was the forcefulness of those efforts were easier for me to do compared to what they were prior to that.
Okay. Okay. So is there any risk of you going back to the way you used to eat?
With the sugar?
With the sugar and all the other junk.
Absolutely not. Paleo, yes. I mean, I don't know if my vegetarian fix is going to... I think I'll... I'm not quite sure, right? I'm going to evaluate that at the end of the month. But definitely, I don't think I would ever go back because, one, I didn't say it was an all or nothing, right? I shifted gradually, and every time I went to the rules where you can have or can't have... And I would kind of get off track. I'd go back and touch base with myself inside, right? I'd say, okay, what is it you're really naturally, why do I want to do this? How does this make me and my body feel? It reconnected me with that drive. And so now it's really a choice. Like, I mean, if you looked in my pantry, there's like nothing there. There's nuts. And then there's just in my fridge, it's just stocked. I mean, I practically live at Whole Foods, right? But I'm proud of that, and I love it. And I love that when I look at spinach, I'm like, oh, wow, look at that. Or my broccoli, it's like, woo! Yeah, I mean, it's so much now a part of who I am that doesn't even factor into my thinking, yeah. It's not even attractive. Like, you can put it all in front of me, and I'd rather just not eat. I'm just not interested, yeah.
I don't know about you. I guess you have the same problem, Alan. I find if I go to people who don't eat the way that we eat, when you refuse fruitcake or stuff like that, you know, they seem to sort of look at you as you come from another planet.
Yes. I've learned not to refuse. I just avoid kind of a sidestep and avoid and just pick and choose what works.
Mm.
And then my friends know better than to try to force me to eat slabs of cakes and all that kind of stuff. They even know what kind of cakes to get me for my birthday because they know how picky I am now.
And that's awesome.
So none of that, you know, hydrogenated fats and loads of sugar and everything. I'll just be as happy with a nice fresh sorbet than anything fancy cake. So I've learned to navigate the way without upsetting people. I basically just go and pick what I know is working for me, and then the rest I just leave it alone. That's all.
Well said. And I think though it's an opportunity to be yourself and also inspire others in the same token, right? Because there a lot of people, they're only doing what they know to do or their own lifestyle or what they think, like if you're at a party, you know, they're only doing what they've traditionally done or what media says, oh, this is how you celebrate the holiday. And so when you show up and you have different food preferences, I really have this thing about not making other people wrong. Like I like people to feel comfortable and good, right? Mm-hmm. So I always, you know, I'm always grateful that they have that. But then I just share with them why I've made this choice and how it works for me. And like you said, Alan, the next time that maybe they have something else that's available. But, you know, there is that tricky, you know, that awkwardness, I guess you could say, around it with initial new friends, or they're not quite familiar or they don't share that same lifestyle. But then when they realize that you're doing it for a different reason and it works for you and you're not making them out to be wrong, then they don't make you out to be wrong. And then you know, they might add one element of what it is that they see you doing that works well, right? Like, so right. For women, you know, like the avocado. So I lived previously in Houston, Texas, which has tons of humidity, so it was great for my skin, right? And, you know, I didn't have my little wrinkles. And I moved to Colorado, and I'm at altitude, and so it's super dry, and it affects your skin. So, of course, I drink tons of water, but, you know, avocado is fantastic for skin, right? So, you know, when my women friends are like, well, why are you just this avocado addict? I'm like, well, I can tell you why. One, because of the nutrition, right, and the diets and the fats and so forth, but also means it's fabulous for your skin, and I do have really good skin. So, you know, I mean, it sounds corny, but if that's all it takes to have someone become interested in that, then the next thing might be, well, what else might help me? What else might encourage me to make healthier food choices that support my body and just their path? So that's why I think sometimes it's an opportunity to, you know, be yourself, express yourself, but also possibly inspire others to be curious about how it could benefit them.
Yeah.
Right. Unfortunately, nowadays, a lot of people are not aware of the effect of how the quality of the food you take in affects your overall health, including your skin health. And they think that slathering some goo on all over their face to hide whatever problem is the answer, because they've been brainwashed into believe that. I always say that your skin health or your body's health comes from the inside, not from the outside.
Absolutely.
And that's something people need to be more aware of, is that if you feed your body healthy or the proper kind of foods, you will have better skins, you won't have pimples, you won't have all these issues that typically people have when they eat the standard American diet.
Absolutely. I could speak volumes on that entire comment, but briefly, there, at least from the sustainability aspect, there are so many eco-friendly products, skincare products out there that while many may not be aware of what they're eating, right? They may not be mindful and at that place to resonate with what you just said, but at least they're like, oh, well, I'll use this eco-friendly product on my skin or so forth because they think it helps the environment and it's better for them. And then again, it could be that initial step that's like, oh, well, this is non-GMO, or oh, it doesn't have sugar. Oh, it's paraben-free, or it's not tested on animals. So then it's like, that might be the actual entry point for them to start taking health and wellness more seriously for themselves and then looking at their food. So I always look at it. There's so many different entry points to health and wellness, and I advocate for all of them, right? Because when each of us as individuals feel better in our bodies, we make better choices. We are our better selves. We bring our better selves to work, to our families, to our communities, to the world. You know, it all comes down to, you know, this is your temple and you're in it. So how are you taking care of this? And food is the single source, that and water. And if you subscribe to it, I believe meditation and prayer, you know, and it's very wholesome. And it seems so simplistic, but in our fast-paced world, it's so easy to be on the run, grab some sugary thing, dessert or treat or muffin that you think is going to get you through the afternoon. And in reality, if you had just made a few simple plans earlier, like when I travel, I do take nuts with me, or I'll take food that's accessible that can get me from one point A to point B without having to make poor choices, that can maintain my energy level, keep my focus, and help me to feel good about myself. You know, I like food that helps me to feel good about myself.
Yeah.
Right. There are a couple of very good quality paleo bars out there that can always fill in the gap. If you, I always like to stuff a couple of bars in my pockets in case I go to a regular party. So at least I have something to munch on.
Yes. It's smart. But all it is just planning ahead a little bit and providing yourself with that support and structure so that you have it in those moments of need. And then if you don't need them, then great. But if you do, then you're supported, and it just keeps it very steady. You know, it keeps your lifestyle very steady and supported.
You've come to paleo, I'll say, a bit later in life than many people. Well, actually, that's not really true. I mean, a lot of people who have retired, they start to look after themselves a bit more, and paleo seems to flop on their doorstep. But having come a bit later than many, would you say that there's quite a learning curve to getting into paleo?
Yes, if you want to be strict about it, right? If you really want to follow the guidelines and so forth, then yes, because one, I don't cook really. I mean, I pretend to cook. So to actually have to create, you know, ingredients, to create a recipe and plan a week, and I mean, that's just mind-boggling. I mean, that's like crazy talk to me, right? So from that perspective, it's a huge learning curve. But if you take a softer approach and modify it in the way that I have, then it was very easy. Once I realized that that's what I wanted to do and I felt the benefits of it, it was very easy to have that modified approach. Like, well, what am I really willing to do? What vegetables do I like? And what am I going to start to include? And what can I remember to get at the grocery store all the time? And how can I easily prepare it weekly so that it's available and I don't, you know, rush off and go get pasta or something? Like, I never eat pasta. I mean, as an endurance athlete, that's what everybody always eats. It's pasta, pasta, pasta. I won't touch it. Mm. So finding what worked for me based on the guidelines and that modified softer approach was not a big challenge. Had I lived into what I aspired to, which was to have the recipes and plan the week ahead and go hardcore, oh my gosh, I don't know if I could have ever have done it, because it's just intimidating. But that's no different to me than any other diet, right? Because that requires like food planning, recipes, and cooking, all of which are, you know, crazy talk to me. I don't know how to do that.
So in essence, then, you sort of learned as you've gone along.
Yes.
Yeah. So having got into paleo that way, looking back on the path you've had, if you could go back and tell yourself 2 years ago to do something different, what would that be?
Oh, wow. I would have gone back further. I would have gone back well into my childhood when I did eat a lot of meat and vegetables. My parents kind of brought us up like that. But I would have avoided the rice. We had a lot of rice as a child. And in my 20s and 30s, I ate a lot of pasta. And I would, if I could go back in time, I would substitute that with more vegetables. Like, I love having, spaghetti squash? You know, I put that in the pressure cooker and I use that as like my spaghetti, if you want to call it that. And I put, oh, it's divine. So it's simple, right? It seems so simple because I'm simple. I can't cook all these elaborate things. But I can make these things that I look forward to eating that are tasty. And I would go back in time and replace a lot of the rice and the pasta And the dairy, you know, had a lot of, you know, like dressing and all that other stuff. I would replace a lot of that with more wholesome choices that I'm enjoying more now.
The way I do my spaghetti squash is I brush it with coconut oil. I cut it in half and, you know, and brush it with coconut and then sprinkle some spice mixes that I get from the store. And then I roast them for about 40 to 45 minutes in my toaster oven.
That sounds delicious.
And it's very tasty. And then you just, once it's cooked, you just scrape it up, put it on your plate. And it's got this wonderful combination of the sweetness from the squash, the healthy fat from the coconut oil and the spices to kind of add it along another layer of flavor. And it's still a very simple way to do it.
I will actually try that. Yes, that I can do.
Good.
That I can do, for sure. Thank you.
Absolutely. And I suppose that sweet potatoes is also a good staple for you, right?
I love it. Love sweet potatoes. Yep. I just
because it's vegetarian and it's paleo.
Yes, it's wonderful. I take the skin off of it, and then I just cut it, and I stick it in the oven just like that, and then I eat it.
Yeah.
And I just love it. And it's a wonderful post-ride recovery meal, right? Because of the carbs, I mean, it has what you need, and it's wonderful. So, yeah. And that's easy. See, I can do that. I can. Yeah, I didn't even know how to call it. Take the skin off, and then you cut it, and you stick it in.
You could also steam it, and then you'll have, you can mash it with some, personally, I like ghee. Technically, ghee is non-dairy by people that are allergic to dairy because the butterfat is out. But if you want to put coconut oil, what else would I put? You can mash it even olive oil. I do it with olive oil sometimes. And then you mash it up and then put your little spices and then even to make it a little more fun, you can add cranberries, like dried cranberries or raisins to it and to make it kind of a fun meal as well. And again, it doesn't require a lot of, you know, the steaming takes a few minutes and then just mash it with a fork and with the fat of choice you want to put in.
That's a great idea. In fact, raisins also, from a performance standpoint, recovery, raisins are fantastic for recovery. Raisins and sweet potatoes, fantastic for recovery. That's a wonderful recipe.
Contrary to what a lot of people think, chefs, when they get home, they don't cook. And so the whole idea is, you know, I spent 45 years of my life in kitchen. The whole idea is when I get home is keep it very simple, very basic, non-complicated at all, and just trying to find shortcuts. And if I can prepare a meal in less than 15 minutes, then I'm not going to do it.
Yes. Yeah. Yes, me too. It's tricky. Well, it's fast-paced, so I mean, if you can prepare it quickly and have it be tasty and nutritious, then it's wonderful. Then you can save the weekends to do a little bit more elaborate, you know?
Yeah.
Absolutely.
Your business, as you say, is geared around sustainability and encouraging other people to be sustainable. How have you noticed your switch in diet has affected the way that you look at business?
Well, I can tell you that when I speak at conferences or attend conferences or prepare workshops that I host, food is important. And I find it interesting when companies that are embracing sustainability or events and so forth, when they choose to offer traditional choices versus sustainable choices or not offer vegan or vegetarian options, to be a conflict with their values. And it's something that's oftentimes overlooked, although more and more are more cognizant and have awareness around that in today's environment than previously. And of course, it's always an evolving aspect, right? And it depends on your audience and what the, I guess, the objectives are. So that can have an influence as to the choices, but it does make a difference. And from my own perspective, it's a matter of value alignment, quite honestly.
Do you find that when you go to sustainable events, they usually serve you food, right? Do they typically serve sustainable food, and do they hire chefs that are knowledgeable in that aspect of food preparation, or just regular typical banquet food with blend roasted chicken and steamed vegetables.
All of the above, Alan, all of the above. And, you know, it's really an opportunity. It's a missed opportunity for those that don't take advantage of it from the perspective of educating and awareness of food. So, for instance, some will say this is locally sourced, where it's from, has these benefits, or it's been, or the food itself isn't sustainable, so to speak, but we're serving it on recycled products, right? Like plates, paper, blah, blah, blah. So, I mean, there's so many different angles that you can come from it. But if you really wanted to take a holistic look at it and capitalize on the opportunity, it would be educating and awareness around this, the food itself, its preparation, the delivery, and the post use of it in terms of how it's going to unused food. How is that being taken care of? Because waste is a big issue. Yeah. How it's being served. Is it on recycled material? Is it on, you know, at a finer event? Is it on, you know, plates? How's that being washed? Is it washed with, you know, eco-friendly cleaning? Is it, you know, so there's so many different ways to approach it and leverage it, right? From the perspective of minimizing food waste to, from a sustainability perspective, to the same token of, here's how we're giving back to the community by reusing this, like donating this food, or there's just, here are the metrics around this event. This is how we're being sustainable. So there's a lot of opportunity in terms of food preparation, consumption, awareness, and post.
Yeah. This past April, I was in charge of the sustainable dinner events, which we had 4 days in a row. And we made sure to have all of our supplies coming from local farmers. We use only chefs that actually were knowledgeable about cooking local and sourcing from local sources. So I wish there would be more of that going on around the country. Unfortunately, I found in general, especially coming from businesses, a resistance, because the only thing they're concerned about is cost. You know, keep it cheap. Instead of trying to maybe, like you said earlier, support your local economy, your local farmers, your local suppliers, instead of buying foods from major food suppliers like Sysco or, you know, U.S. Foods, or these people that source their food from all these industrial farms. So I think there needs to be a shift towards more of that. And that's where you can actually suggest those kind of issues when you're going to an event and say, oh, by the way, is your food local? Is it, you know, how is it prepared? And who's, you know, is the chef knowledgeable in that field? And so on and so forth. Those issues you can have some influence on.
Absolutely. And I think it raises the point that many event planners or companies that are hosting conferences and so forth struggle with the idea of, there's so many different choices, say locally sourced or sustainable or GMO, non-GMO. There's so many aspects to the conversation that it's just easier sometimes to just shy away from the conversation, just shut it down, and just, you know, they'll say, we're just going to go with this traditional option. And what I'd like to propose is similar to what you were saying, Alan, is that, well, say there's a list of 10, you know, locally sourced or non-GMO, or say there's a list of 10 requirements that would designate a sustainable food option to prefer. Maybe you can't make all 10, right? Maybe you can only make 3, but advocate why you chose those 3 and how they're in alignment with your company's sustainability goals or initiatives or metrics, so that you connect the dots between what an attendee is experiencing and how that resonates with your company. So for instance, I will be hosting a series of six speeches here in Colorado. And I looked at all the different options. You know, I'm a small business, so I looked at all the different options, and price is a consideration in terms of what that's going to be like for my events. So then it was like, okay, well, what are our choices? And one was, we wanted to support local business, right? It needs to be locally sourced, and then it has to be delivered, and the post-consumption has to be done sustainably, right? Minimize waste and so forth. So we decided these were our choices based on our values, and then we selected a company to work with. Now, granted, I would prefer that it's going to be all organic, right? Or all some of these other, say, the list of 10 requirements. But that's not feasible at this point, based on where I am as a business and what I can do and what's available to me at a price point that works. So there are ways to make it work by selecting those choices and then communicating that out, right? So in our event, we will have the information about, well, this is why we chose this company and this is what they're doing around it, and help co-promoting so that it gives visibility to others so that even more of these types of conversations are being had. And hopefully one day it just becomes mainstream that, okay, well, in event planning or corporate workshop type environments, that these are the requirements or criteria that we can choose from, and we can add more and more to the list as we evolve on our path.
The good news is that typically if you choose local, the GMO issue is out of the pictures, because local small farmers do not use genetically engineered products. So, and that's something, of course, you can look into.
One thing sort of closing the circle on sustainability, and this is something that Alan is quite involved in, is the fact that the most sustainable type of food we can eat is the one that keeps us the healthiest, because then you're not calling on doctors, you're not calling on medicines, and you're not calling on all the other reparation things that you might need, because you maintain health.
When you look at what's happening in our world, specifically United States, around obesity, sugar consumption, the ties from sugar to diabetes, healthcare, there's so many complicated issues, and personally, I believe it all goes back to food in terms of the complexities around the food industry, government, and consumption in terms of consumers. And it's an enmeshed situation from my perspective. And those that are looking for clarity and navigating through all of that are really tending to lean more towards exactly what we're talking about, you know, health and wellness through food. Food is medicine, food is nutrition, food is, you know, the staple of life. And it will become, at some point, unacceptable to have to go to an event where they serve food that is not in alignment with their choices. Now, granted, that may take some time, Alan, right? But there is a very strong movement leaning back towards that, and I hope to see that occur.
So the food revolution will come from the people and not from the top, not from the government. Unfortunately, the government is supporting these monoculture crops that are basically destroying the environment, instead of advocating or allocating some of that money toward helping local farmers to grow healthy foods. I think the whole agricultural policy in this country is completely wrong, in my opinion.
Agreed. Agreed. But, you know, I don't always feel that, you know, many think, oh, government has to make a change, or there has to be policy change, or there has to be companies need to lead the change. And the problem I have with that conversation is that it's always pointing out to someone else. You know, each of us has that power, right? You have that power. I have that power. Mark has that power. Each of us have that power within our choice, how we vote with our financial dollar, like what we buy at the store, where we attend, the companies that we support. And even more so related to my own business is, you know, social media has leveled that playing field, right? So before, you know, when we're talking about policy or obesity or health and wellness or whatever issue you want to talk about, it was large companies pushing content or information one way, you know, and social media has democratized that so that everyone has a voice. And while we're still kind of, I think, consumers are stuck in that traditional mindset of, oh, the government should change or companies should change, they're equally responsible as an individual consumer to make that choice and to voice their own preferences, right? So, you know, there's a shift, and I think that we're transforming. You know, we're in that process of transformation from the agricultural standpoint, preferences. I think social media is one medium that's helping that transition. But again, it goes back to that internal preference of what resonates with me as an individual and how can I express that, whether it's through like eating paleo or, you know, taking action by voting, by going to the farmer's market versus, you know, a traditional grocery store where, you know, things are shuttled in from across the entire world and that sustainable supply chain does not exist. I mean, so there's a lot of different ways for that to be expressed, but it all boils down to individual choice.
Yeah.
Right, absolutely agree. I mean, that's what I've been talking in my book since I started writing about food and health, is you have the power of the wallet. You decide what the corporation will eventually have to follow the market, to follow what the people want, instead of trying to force their choices onto the people. That's one thing that the American consumer is not, doesn't seem to be aware yet. I mean, there is some of it that is definitely aware, but the general population doesn't seem to be aware that they have the power to change things if they put their mind to it. So it's all about education. They have to be aware, it being told how the changes are good for them, and then eventually they will start making choices, different choices.
Yes. But I also think it has to do with accountability too. So no different like in your own personal life, aside from food or anything like that. When you want to make a change, you have to be accountable for that change. And sometimes that change is uncomfortable, even if it's for the good, right? I mean, even if you're going for like a really big dream or a big goal or something at work, or you can't be who you currently are and be your future self having that goal without making some kind of personal transformation. And that personal transformation can sometimes be frightening. And so I think that just generally as a whole, globally, we're in that space of waking up and taking on that accountability for ourselves, right? And that's a really broad conversation. But like I said, there are different entry points towards doing that. Food is one of them, right? Food is one of those choices of how can I better myself? In order to have this future self or goal that I want, what do I need to change about myself today in order to have that? And I think, you know, food is an avenue towards that because it talks about health and wellness, longevity, productivity, being able, quality of life, you know. And then there's also all these other aspects that we've talked about today as an entry point to that.
It's also the fact that in American society, compared to other countries, food is a smaller portion of the budget than, for example, in Europe. In France, the food budget is about 20-something percent of the budget compared to the American budget, which is like half of that.
It used to be about a third. It's gone down to about 28%, I think, now. That's still a significant amount of the budget goes on food in France.
Right.
A lot of that is down to the fact that food is central to sort of social pleasure and so forth in France. You know, you don't go to the cinema, you go around to friends to eat.
Yes. Yeah. And so the choice again is, it's a matter of choice. Do you choose to put more of your money into healthy food and enjoying food as not just as a way to feed your body, but also to feed yourself socially and so on and so forth, or do you choose to buy more gizmos and more tablets or cell phones or flat-screen TVs? Those are the choices.
But even unfortunately, for economically challenged and underserved communities, they don't even have that choice. You know, I mean, to feed your family at a fast food restaurant for, what, $12, $15, $20 versus the limited amount of organic produce that you could get at a farmer's market or store couldn't even feed your same family for the same amount. Like, there's a disparity between the cost of what I consider real food, like organic foods, versus what's available, whether, you know, junk food, what I call junk food or fast food and different things like that. I mean, so there's, you know, there's some real challenges. I hate to say the ethical thing, like should or shouldn't, but it's a real challenge for some, you know, economically challenged families to eat well. It's almost like there isn't a choice, right? I have to feed my family, so I'm going to feed them this poorer quality food. And then it serves that whole cycle that we were talking about in terms of healthcare and obesity. And it's a real, it's a complicated issue.
There's two major issues. One is the government in the kind of policies they pursue by pushing for those kind of crops that are making the people, you know, fatter and sicker and increased sugar and diabetes and so on and so forth. The government should allocate more of their agricultural budget towards helping smaller farmers to create healthier food at a lower price. That's one point. The second point is that who says that eating fast food is cheap? It's not. And it's highly waste. It's high food waste. I mean, you packaging waste, not only, don't even get me started on the quality of the food, but if you consider that any good, I guess we're approaching a touchy subject here, but any housewife that knows how to cook can put together a meal for probably $1.50 a person instead of spending $5 or $6 at the fast food restaurant, right? I can do it. Now, granted, I'm a chef, but that still doesn't mean that a family on a low income level cannot put together a decent meal with, you know, doesn't have, I mean, who says that we have to eat protein every single day for one thing? Mm. You know, you have all countries that survive on rice and beans and locally grown crops without having to eat protein every single day. So there's, again, it's, we go back to some, like you say, complicated issues, but the choices are simple. You can cook for yourself and cook. I mean, I can put together a meal of good quality food for less than $5 per serving at home compared to, I mean, the good example is that a couple of years ago, I wrote a book on how to eat healthy French cuisine for less than $10 a day. When I talked to my son, because he's kind of, unfortunately, the expert on fast food, and he said, you can't eat fast food for $10 a day. And so the challenge was, can I prove that it's possible to eat healthy? And I use the French because it's my hook, but is it possible to eat healthy food for less than $10 a day per person? That is breakfast, lunch, dinner, and snacks. And it is possible. I prove it in my book, but it does require a little effort. You do have to use shopping techniques. You do have to create menus that are simple and yet nutritious. You do get to eat protein a couple times a week. It doesn't have to be every single day. But there's ways to work around this without breaking the bank, literally.
I'm going to have to get that book.
Yeah.
But no, and I agree, you know, to summarize my thoughts on it, I agree with you. It is a very complicated issue. I don't think there are any simple answers. I think it's a very holistic approach that needs to be taken. And while I don't walk in the shoes of those that, you know, like a single mom, you know, raising multiple kids and, you know, working and may not have the time or the resources to provide for her family in the way that they would want to. Like, I don't have that experience, but I have compassion and I guess, and a passion to help contribute to a solution in that regard. And I would like to see our world reflect that a little bit differently. And I think that going back to what we said a little bit earlier, is that there is a movement towards that, you know, towards the local, locally sourcing, more sustainable. And while it's just on the front edge, at some point it would filter back and hopefully help those that are not in a position right now to do what we're talking about, you know?
It's also important to educate people in this part of society. We have a program here in Austin, it's called Sustainable Food Center, which you may have heard of it. And we have classes that teaches people how to cook healthy, simple meals on the budget. And there's usually, the class is full, there's 30 or 40 people per class. And so it's all a matter of teaching people, disadvantaged people, and how to handle food on the budget. And there's also a program also here in Austin. I don't know if it's available in your area, but our local farmers market actually offer coupons for every dollar in what is the name, SNAP program. Mm-hmm. They actually double that. So you bring your SNAP coupons to the farmers welcoming booth, I guess. And you'll give your coupons, they'll give you $2 worth of that for, so you can actually buy some decent food for basically a 50% discount.
Awesome. I know that we do have similar programs here in Golden and in the Denver area. I'm not quite familiar with what exactly they are, but They're very sustainability minded, very locally source minded. They support farmers. I mean, it's wonderful in this area because it's so supportive of like the values that I embrace. So I don't necessarily feel the disparity as when I travel as much, you know.
As someone who declares they don't really like cooking, but who likes to buy good food, where do you shop?
I shop at Whole Foods a lot, but like I just mentioned, here in Golden and Denver and Boulder, there are absolutely fabulous, fabulous restaurants that, you know, when I have to dine for, you know, clients or when I go out socially, there are wonderful places to go that support everything, all the values that we've talked about here today. And in addition, the people, my friends, right, my colleagues, people that I work with, clients, they mirror so much of these values, whether they're athletes in training for races or they are runners or they hike, they ski. I mean, I live in an environment that is really life-affirming in so many ways. And that was one of the choices of why I chose to move here, was to support myself in that type of structure. So I'm blessed. I am absolutely blessed with that, yes. I would just like to thank you both. I'd like to thank you for being leaders in this space and providing this information with so much passion and clarity, because to those that listen, whether they are familiar or unfamiliar or span anywhere in the gamut, there are so many entry points of thoughtful discussion that could be used as exploratory measures to embark upon this path for health and wellness. And I think that I'd really like to just share my appreciation for what you're doing.
Thank you.
Well, thank you very much. And it's a pleasure to bring in people like you that can actually express your opinion so clearly and give us another side of the story, because, you know, I'm completely immersed in it. So to me, all I'm thinking is, I'm a food geek, all I'm thinking is food and paleo and non-GMO and this and that. But it's also, I have to remind myself that there's a whole country out there that has different opinions and also can learn from the guests that we bring in. So thank you very much for being on our show.
Thank you.
Now, I'm sure that a lot of what you said interests people in many different ways. How can they best get hold of you if they want to sort of bring in your sustainability or your other skills and passions?
Well, the best way to reach me is through our website, www.taigacompany.com. Or if you want to speak with me directly, you could reach me on Twitter at Taiga Company. I have about 42,000 highly engaged Twitter followers on sustainability, these very topics that we're talking about. And the conversation can be very robust, but there is tons of complimentary information that I would love to engage and share.
Super.
Thank you very much again.
Yep. Thanks again, Julie. It's been fascinating chatting with you.
Absolutely.
Thank you. Good luck with all your projects.
Thank you, and same to you.